My daughters came to me when they were about 7 and 9 years old and asked, could they walk down to their grandparents' condo from their school, after school? It's about 6 blocks straight down the hill. But that trip would require them to cross a 6-lane road. Now, I raised my girls to be independent. And I'd given them lots of freedom to make up their own minds about things, to make their choices that were age appropriate. But I was torn when they asked for this permission to walk down to their grandparents. This new level of independence scared me. I wanted to support them, nurture them, make them bold, but I was afraid. They were so little. And that street was, it was a very big, nasty street. Now, I didn't worry about them being kidnapped. That wasn't my fear. I knew they were streetwise. We had gone and done a workshop, a course on preparing your children to be out on the streets. I knew that they were aware and observant and responsible and that they would be together. I wasn't worried about that. My problem was my own fear. So I told them that even though they were ready for this next big step into the world of independence, I, their mom, was not. And I asked them if they could give me a little bit more time to get used to the idea. When the New York journalist Lenore Skenazy wrote about allowing her 9-year-old son to take the subway home from school, it produced a maelstrom of criticism. Yeah. She was labeled on U.S. national television America's worst mom. And Skenazy went on to investigate why it is that our culture, the North American culture, the safest, most prosperous culture in history, is so gripped by fear, irrational fear. She describes it as worst first thinking. Worst first thinking is to think of the worst case scenario first and then act as if it is for sure going to happen. This response of worst first thinking is perpetuated by parents, administrators, politicians, lawmakers, etc. And it is reinforced every day through the media. Now, let me be clear that terrible things do happen. Okay? Children are kidnapped. Terrible things happen. But the statistics, the facts, are hugely against this happening. But it could happen. And the media reinforces that possibility then every day. And what parents would not want to protect their children? Of course they do. Of course we do. Of course I do. But we also need to remember that it is a relatively safe world out there. Not perfectly safe, but safe. And we need to remember that and think rationally about that and reinforce that to ourselves and for our children. Fear. Fear is a part of being human. And what I want to explore a bit this morning. I think that we, individually and as a culture, need to educate ourselves about fear. Because if we don't, I fear that we will devolve into a desperate, irrational, paralyzed society that has given up its power to choose given up its democratic responsibility and is vulnerable to control through manipulation of our fears by those who benefit. Now let me step back a moment and just talk about fear as a natural part of human life. Why do we fear? Well, simply to stay alive. The fear response is built into our biological makeup. When the bear walks out of the bush, our bodies react. We have two choices, fight or flight. We can either run or we can fight. Or perhaps in the presence of a bear, we might choose a third option, which is to lie down and pretend we're dead. But that just sort of muddies my description. Fight or flight. Those are our two basic choices, built-in responses for self-preservation. Daniel Gardner, senior writer of the Ottawa Citizen, has written two books on fear, one called The Science of Fear and the other one called Risk, The Science and Politics of Fear. In the first book, he says that the brain has two systems to analyze risk. One primitive, which is unconscious and intuitive, and the other part, which is conscious and rational. Most of the time, these two parts agree, he says. But when they don't, we can fixate, for example, on our child being abducted, although the statistics tell us the chances are extremely low. And then on the flip side, if these two things don't jive, if these two parts of our brain, we can irrationally shrug off really serious risks, such as smoking, even though the statistics show us that rationally the chances of cancer affecting us negatively are very high. Now, everyday life has plenty of fears. I think we could all name a few dozen, yeah? Slipping on the ice, slipping in the bathtub, forgetting something really important, like a wedding service. That's a big fear for ministers and lay chaplains. Busy ones, anyway. Flying. That's a big fear. Yeah, this week, I was on a few planes. I was on the plane coming home from Boston. You know this moment? The plane is at the beginning of the runway, and the engines are revving louder and louder, right? The building the energy, and then that slow start down the runway, and the machine gathers speed, and then there's that moment before liftoff, right? When you wonder, will it or won't it? The irrational, intuitive part of my self-preservation system at that moment kicks in. And the impossibility of flight comes into my body. And I offer up a prayer to everybody I love, just in case. And then I affirm to myself, with the conscious, rational part of that self-preservation system, that we will get to our destination, that there are thousands of flights every day, and you rarely hear of planes blowing up or not getting off the ground. I negotiate in that moment before liftoff between these parts of me that want to fight or flight, which is a little hard to do in an airplane, or that rational part that knows it's very likely that we will be successful taking off. You know, what's interesting is that the statistics tell us that the most actual dangerous part of a typical plane journey, do you know what it is? Driving to the airport. Statistically, more accidents happen in cars than in planes. David Gardner, another weird statistic that just entered my mind in my research, Did you know Christmas lights are more dangerous than sharks? More people die from Christmas lights than sharks. Statistically speaking. Not that I want you to be afraid of Christmas lights, but... yeah. So David Gardner, or Daniel Gardner, in The Science of Fear, states that the source of our societal problem is that unreasoning fear, the unconscious primitive instinct to protect and survive. So when the media pulls out the latest story on fear, and this week I think it was the sinkhole in Florida, we respond, right? With this primal pull to know the details, because this primitive survival part thinks that if it knows everything there is to know about sinkholes, that it can protect us. But, you know, actually the opposite is what happens. We get caught up in the latest fear story, and we can't do anything to protect ourselves. I mean, there's not that many sinkholes in the Tri-City area that we need to protect ourselves from. You know, some large holes in the street that we have to worry about driving around, but the thing is that the adrenaline, we hear the story, and the adrenaline courses through our bodies, and then we are physically on alert for the possibility of the next threat. We're primed for the next story. Now, whatever happened to herpes? Okay? Herpes used to be the number one fear. Not that it hasn't gone, you know, it's still out there. It's still bad. You don't want to get herpes. But it's not the number one fear. What about satanic cults? Do you remember? It used to be the number one fear. Mad cow disease used to be the number one fear. E. coli in our tomatoes and lettuce, I think just last year. Sorry? It's a legitimate fear. Wash your tomatoes, wash your lettuce. Right. Take care. So the number one fear keeps changing, though, and fueled by the media, the stories. I'm not saying that these things are not something that we need to be smart about. But the level of media time given to them is directly related, directly connected to our level of fear about them. Gardner says that we have become a nation of worriers, driven by this unreasonable fear. So why? Why would we be so afraid all the time? Well, one suggestion, Professor Beck of the London School of Economics says that we are more afraid than ever before because we are more at risk than ever before. Technology, for example, is outstripping our ability to control it. The environment is collapsing. Corruption in government grows. Who we put in power, we fear no longer have any power. We don't trust those that we put in charge, and we are scared. So as our brains are taking this in, our irrational, intuitive brain reacts. We sense danger, and we are afraid. So that's what Professor Beck says. On the other hand, Gardner says, there's always been people crying cataclysm and doom. You only have to look back in history. It's been going on forever, right? The facts are that we are the healthiest, wealthiest, longest-lived people in history. And yet, we continue to be increasingly afraid. And this is one of the great paradoxes of our time right now. It's the paradox of being both rational, conscious, and unconscious, intuitive human beings. On the social level of fear, we need to take some control back. And we can do this by exercising our will to gather and focus on fact, using that conscious, rational part of our survival system. We can turn off the news. We can begin to reflect on statistics rather than reacting unconsciously to media stories, the images that manipulate the parts of our brain that are created to protect ourselves and our family. When we begin to use the rational, conscious part of our brain, we can gain greater understanding by creating context. We can then challenge, for example, from a conscious, rational perspective, the current federal government's building more prisons when, in fact, the crime rate is dropping. Context. If we do not choose to use the rational, conscious part of us, then our fears can be used to create a certain kind of behavior. For example, if I'm told a certain segment of the population is dangerous, I will avoid that population and the areas in the city where they live. We may be led to believe indirectly through image and story, for example, that poor people are dirty, therefore carry disease. Or poor people are desperate, therefore they might do anything, meaning they could be a threat. These are the images and the languages of fear. Poor people become generalized and stigmatized. The primal piece of us, that unconscious intuitive piece, turns on to protect us from unpredictable, dirty people. And if we are only using our primal unconscious brain, we will change our behavior to avoid poor people because we think we're protecting ourselves. You can see how wrong that is. If we accept these unsupported opinions and change our behavior accordingly, avoid certain parts of the city, avoid certain people, and build complex opinions of certain places and people, we are letting that unconscious piece of us control our behavior. And we're not living our values and principles. This is how our free will is co-opted. Why do good people do nothing? Because they're operating from a deep, unconscious fear of protection. So we all need to examine our actions and objectively notice when fear comes up. Notice the fear that comes into your body. Notice the fearful thoughts. Notice when your behavior is motivated by fear, and ask yourself, am I really threatened? What is really happening here? Use the rational, conscious part of your brain. At a very simple level, fear is fuel. Fear is a source of energy. And it can be utilized by the body, as I said before, for fight or flight. It could also be used to face and surmount personal obstacles and fuel our dreams and our goals. If you ask an artist what fuels them, many will say fear. What they mean is that when an artist is faced with a blank page or a blank canvas, metaphorically, they are standing on the edge of a cliff facing the complete unknown. Creativity means to create, means that that which is about to be created has never existed. There's nothing there yet. It's empty, blank, unknown. To create, then, is to risk facing that unknown. To live creatively is to face the unknown every single day. It is to live with a certain level of fear all the time. Now, this is not the kind of fear that requires protection from. Actually, just the opposite. It requires openness, vulnerability, vulnerability to the unknown. It requires courage to feel that fear and courage to leap into the abyss of that unknown, uncreated moment. We can learn a lot from artists about navigating the conscious-unconscious paradox of fear. We can learn a lot about how to live our lives, understanding that there are times when we need to utilize the rational conscious part of our brain, and there are times when we need to trust wholly in the unconscious intuitive part of our brain. The artist has a lot of experience navigating that paradox. There's a particular terror, of which I know intimately, that is experienced by some actors when they stand in the dark before their entrance. They know that once they step into the light, there's no turning back. They know that once they commit to moving forward, they are risking everything. Failure. A certain kind of death. They may forget their lines, their movements, and they may embarrass themselves in front of countless friends, family, and strangers. Standing in the wings in the dark, their survival instincts are on really high alert. The adrenaline is pumping through the body. The mechanism of fear and flight is primed to do something. They know, the actor knows, they won't really die, but it feels like they will. They also know that if they have any experience with this, that to step off that cliff into the unknown, there is also the possibility that they will create something amazing. That's called magic. That creative magic. It's this enormous aliveness that the actor utilizes. This bravery, this courage that makes a live performance truly alive. Every night is different. There is a secret about fear that almost all artists know, and I'm going to share it with you. You may know it too. The artist knows that fear and excitement are two sides of a very same coin. They're fuel. So once upon a time, there was a young woman, perhaps about 21, and she had a dream to travel into unknown places. She felt a particular call to travel to a different continent and to experience the world's mysteries and adventures. Now, she'd worked for a year or two to save up the money to do this. She'd bought her airline ticket. Plans had been made. The day approached to leave. She was excited about going. Her new orange backpack was carefully filled to bursting, each item carefully rolled or folded or taped into place. She headed off for the airport, her friends along for support. But walking towards the gate, she began to feel this creeping fear. Her steps began to slow down, slowed even more. Fear began to grip her legs, her spine, her arms, her heart. The enormity of what she was doing roared through her mind, and she barely heard the thought screaming in her head, "I can't do this." But she did not let this gripping fear stop her. She continued to take one more step, and then another, over an invisible cliff into the unknown. And this adventure that began with fear and excitement and a choice to keep walking, taking one more step, even as the fear gripped her, was the most important decision she had ever made in her life. It changed her life. I could be talking about myself. I could be talking about my eldest daughter. My daughters, when they were 7 and 9, they only needed to wait a few months until their mother was ready to let them cross that 6-lane highway road to walk down to their grandparents' house. It still wasn't easy for me. I still needed to be brave and let them live their lives, knowing that I had done my best to give them the tools that they needed to be thoughtful and responsible and prepared young women. There are plenty of things in this world to be really afraid of, and a whole lot of things that are not worth being afraid of. Fear is, it's a natural part of our lives, but we do not need to fear fear. As the American President Roosevelt said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes the needed efforts to convert retreat into advance, to take the next step. If our goal is to create a society based on justice, then we need to gather the facts, look at them rationally, and make our decisions based on those facts and not on a barrage of fear stories. If our goal is personal and spiritual wholeness, we need to risk the dream by taking the next step regardless of the fear we might feel. We need to trust that freedom comes with courage and commitment. And if our goal is to be fully alive, creative human beings, we sometimes need to be willing to step off the cliff into the unknown. Thank you.